Trudeau hid his family fortune in a trust fund. And then he vacations on private islands of billionaires who probably keep their money offshore so that they don't pay any tax. Trudeau and his friends are not going to pay for this. You will pay for it. And you're already paying for it.
10:33 here on this, it is Wednesday. Yeah, I feel like we've had a whole day of news just already in the first hour and a half. It's been a busy one. That's Pierre Poilievre. He was chatting with Greg Brady this morning on Toronto Today and talking about the budget. You know, it's all about the fine print. Like, you get what you get on the day of the budget, and then we all have a chance to sleep on it and actually read through all the fine print, and you go, oh my God, I didn't see that. Oh, yikes, what's that? Oh, what's that going to cost me? But no question about it, it's all being sold under the guise of fairness. But it's fairness for the younger voters. The Trudeau government wants them desperately back into their corner. So they're promising, you know, level the playing field. Question is, can they be lured back by $39 billion in new spending? Will it get them into any houses? Are they affordable? Will there be more rentals? You know, if you're worried about cost of living, then you should be really worried about the fact that just on our $1.25 trillion in national debt, we are blowing $54 billion. $54 billion. We just throw it in the garbage. That's a lot. But nonetheless, I think the biggest is, you know, we didn't get the wealth tax as people thought, as we were chatting about, but we did get the capital gains boosted up. And I think, you know, if you're in the middle class, whatever that is, because we are all in it, apparently, it's going to hit a lot of people. So you might be thinking, well, this is just going to hit the rich people, but you might be surprised. Let me bring in Ian Lee to explain all of this. Of course, he is with the Sprott School of Business, and he's at Carleton University. I haven't talked to you in a while. Good to have you, Ian.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm not sure what day it is. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what we heard in the budget. And I think one of the things is the capital gains tax.
Yes.
You were in real estate for a very, very long time. You certainly know what it was like with double-digit inflation. You know what it's like in that world. Capital gains might not offend a lot of people, but it certainly could impact a lot of people.
The impact is enormous, and I want to unpack it for everybody because I haven't read any accounts yet anywhere in Canada of how radical this is. And full disclosure, I don't have any stocks or bonds. I'm not subject to this tax. The only asset I own in this world is my principal residence where I live, and I don't consult to any of these organizations. Why I see this as so dangerous is because I do comparative analysis all the time in terms of taxation and the economies of Canada and the U.S. Mm-hmm. What the government did yesterday was opened up a huge gap between the capital gains tax in the United States and in Canada. Some people listening would say, so what? So we're going to go after the rich. Let me connect the dots for everybody. Imagine you're rich. I'm not.
I'm going to imagine. I'm imagining it.
Okay. You're Shopify or a successful Canadian company that and the value of the company is going up over time, and there's investors in that company who from time to time sell their investment, could even be the owner. What are you going to be doing this morning? I would suggest that every wealthy person in this country, I mean wealthy, I don't mean upper middle class that has, you know, thousands of dollars to take a trip. No. I mean wealthy, multimillionaires that invest in companies. I would suggest that they are burning up the phone lines with their accountants saying, how can I move my assets to the United States of America where I will not experience the confiscatory confiscation of my wealth by the government of Canada? This is what she did unwittingly, was sent a message to all the investors. They're the people that create the jobs, that invest in the economy, in factories, in companies, that hire people. And sent a message to those investors, don't stay in Canada. Go to America. It's a better place to invest.
Yeah.
Because if you stay here, we are going to come after you and confiscate a much larger amount of your wealth. This is the worst possible message that any government could send. We have, because I study this, the C.D. Howe Research Institute in Toronto has data on their website. Anybody can go look it up. David Dodge has talked about this in his speeches. So has Don Drummond. So have other people. We have aggregate investment in Canada. It's called capital investment, which just means business and factories and equipment and, mm-hmm. and companies, has been going down under the Trudeau years.
Yeah,
Professor Jackson says Calgary has documented this. So what we're going to do is accelerate the decline. And why investment is so important is it creates the jobs and the growth of tomorrow that generates the taxes to pay for all the goodies like health care and higher ed that we want to have in this country.
Yeah, but again, it's all about this generational fairness, Ian. So the rich will pay a bit more.
Smoke and mirrors.
I know
that is smoke and mirrors.
They're
using that message to cover up what they're doing.
Right, but it does play well, you know, with the average person who doesn't, I mean, he doesn't follow this. It's like, oh, good, we'll get the rich to pay for it. And I'm like, we don't have enough rich people. But again, to your point, we have no productivity either. So these talking points are talking about how the economy is doing swimmingly. It's going to be a very rude awakening if things don't turn around. But I want to play you a clip of what Ms. Freeland, and she used this word a few times yesterday while out kind of selling this budget, but take a listen.
And we know it takes an activist government which is investing, and crucially, it takes a government that's prepared to lead the charge and change the mindset of the country. Cut through the red tape, get municipalities to accept gentle zoning. That is all happening. I'm very, very optimistic.
Right. So we need an activist government is what we need, and that will bring us the generational fairness, whatever it is. But I'm like, the last thing we need is activism in government. That's what's gotten us into this.
I so categorically disagree, and I mean, I could talk for hours on this subject because I've taught around the world in many developing countries where I've seen that mentality at work. I taught in Cuba. No, I wasn't on the beaches getting a suntan. I taught in Cuba, in Havana. I've taught in Argentina. I've taught in Poland, in Ukraine, before Poland turned itself around. I've taught in Russia. And my point being, that idea that government is supposed to lead, as she just said, is nonsense. Mm. Their job is to be the referee of the hockey game, make sure there's a level playing field that is conducive to business investment, and then get the hell out of the way. Their job is not to tell Sidney Crosby when to shoot the puck. Their job is not to own the hockey team that has the contract with Sidney Crosby. Their job is to act as a neutral, impartial referee, not to tell businesses what to charge or where to invest or how big they should grow. This is the fundamental flaw in their philosophical outlook. They really believe in that belief that it's the role of government to lead. That is not how decentralized economies work.
Yeah, well,
it's the role of private sector to do that.
Yeah, but you know, if you've seen the numbers in the private sector is shrinking by the second, and I don't get the sense that they care about the private sector anymore. But you know, what does this mean then, Ian? Because a lot of people will say, well, they'll see the headline go, it's just for rich people. But capital gains on this, I mean, the wealth is not just what you make in a paycheck. It would be, what's the wealth of, let's say you do own a house, right? All of that becomes part of your wealth. So I think a lot more people could be netted in this, in the middle class, and say like, well, I got a small inheritance from my mom and dad, or I had like a second rental property. I was trying to make some investment money, whatever. That's all going to get dinged away.
Yes, it is. And that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. And I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm just trying to figure out how it's going to impact me. Like, I guess what I'm trying to find out is because I think I speak for a lot of people in the private sector. What I'm putting in my house is my retirement. It's whatever I'm going to leave to my kid. Like it's all I've got.
Yes, but what this capital gains proposal is going to hit many more people than just the so-called rich.
Yeah,
if you own a second, a cottage,
yeah.
All kinds of Canadians own a cottage, a second property. If you sell it, it will be hit with this increased capital gains tax. So it's not just the 0.13%. It's going to hit anybody in Canada who makes a capital gain on any kind of let's say you own an antique car, you sell it for a profit. You may have bought a 1970 Corvette and restored it, paid $5,000 and sell it for $30,000. Say, I'm not a big rich person. That is a capital gain.
Mm-hmm.
You will be hit with this tax. It's going to fall on ordinary people as well. Anyone who sells something, an asset, for a profit is going to get nailed by this tax, this additional tax that is higher than before. So it's not just falling on the so-called rich. It's going to fall on a lot of ordinary people. Like you just said, if you have an investment property and you sell it for a profit, you're going to get nailed with this much larger capital gains tax. So this is going to hit many more people than just the rich.
Yeah, I mean, it is a fancy talking point, but it just, you have to read between the lines on that one, too. All right, well, Ian, there's going to be a whole lot of people. I don't think this is the budget that's going to turn them around, but I think the Trudeau Liberals are counting on it.
Right.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to spend.
It is.
Appreciate your time on it. Yeah.
I wish they would just spend less. What they should have done very quickly, Alex, is, and this is my other criticism, they could have said, okay, we're going to spend the money we think is important, but they should have sterilized that new spending by saying any new dollar of spending will be offset by cutting out of the existing budget. In 2020, which was only 4 years ago.
Yeah, they would do that in defense, so that's the problem.
They keep taking $300 billion, and today they're spending $500 billion. That's an astonishing, that's almost doubling the spending of the government of Canada in 4 years, and the pandemic is over. This is base spending. So my point is, there's tons of money that they're spending. They could have said, okay, we want to spend this money on pharmacare and dental plan and blah, blah, blah. They could have taken that out of existing spending and get rid of the deficit, which is also exacerbating inflation and making the job tougher for the Bank of Canada.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll follow the dollar on this one for some time. You have a terrific day, Ian. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Alex. Thank you.
There you go. That's Ian Lee. Bearing the hard truths of this budget, and again, what people will see in the headlines is not necessarily how the policy will play out, but, you know, the Trudeau government could also run on this, make this their platform to run on, right?
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.